Bulli, der Eishockey-Podcast.
Bully, der Eishockey Podcast. This episode will be in English. Welcome to Bully, the Eishockey Podcast. My name is Stefan, and I'll be hosting this episode in English together with my genius partner, Helmut. Hi, Helmut.
Hey.
Today, we have a very special episode for you. We are thrilled to see Matt and Megan McEwen again after such a long time, and to have a deep conversation with them about the remarkable career and how the family worked together for Matt to chase his dream. From the beginnings in Chicago, through European success, to a big step with the Boston Bruins. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
How are you doing?
Oh, good. Enjoying summer. We're back in Chicago area, which is home for us. Getting to visit family and friends and enjoy some time at the pool. But we're really enjoying our summer.
Let's start right away with your career. It all started with the Chicago Freeze and later with the Chicago Steel. You were drafted in the 8th round. Did you expect it or did you hope to go earlier?
Yeah, of course you hope to go earlier. So it was a unique year because the lockout was scheduled to be like the following year. And I actually had to opt into the draft. So I was one of the younger players that was allowed to be drafted. Probably in a normal circumstance, I would have waited another year and try to prove myself a little bit more. You'd hope to go a little earlier. I had a knee injury at the end of that season. I think my agents were projecting, you know, somewhere between third and fifth, and you know, you sit there and you fall, and it's like, you know, I'm drafted in a round that doesn't even exist anymore. That's what I tell my son. And so it was still a really cool moment. I remember getting the phone call. I was with my mom and my dad, and we all had like this group family hug, and we all were like cheering and having tears, and just a moment that's sort of, you know, it's nice to be recognized. That's all it is. It's a moment in a hockey career that it feels, once you're drafted, bigger than it is. It's really just the beginning of something, and it's a wonderful opportunity to be a part of an organization like Ottawa. Mm.
To go on with your career, 2004 to 2008. Ohio State University, you were captain of the Buckeyes in your final season. After a brief stint with the Binghamton Senators, all great names by the way, you joined the Eisbären Berlin in 2008. Making such a move to Europe at that young age was quite an uncommon back then. What drove that decision? What are your memories from Berlin?
Don Jackson drove the decision. So that's an easy answer. So a little bit of context. Don was an assistant coach for the Chicago Blackhawks. And as he was in transition from Chicago to Ottawa, he had a moment in time where he was able to help coach my like U18 AAA team. And so him and his son Clint were a part of our team for training camp, and Don was a part of our coaching staff and helping out. And so we started a relationship at that point in time. And then once I turned pro, you know, my plan was I was going to train all summer and then go to Berlin and use that time as preparation to get ready for a camp here in North America. And what ended up happening was I was there for a little bit, and then remember Peter John Lee was the manager at the time, and Pete was like, "Hey, would you like to stay for another weekend?" So yeah, sure, I'll stay for another weekend. It's like, oh, we got your, I think it was called European Trophy. It wasn't even Champions. Like, we got a European Trophy game coming up.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we got another game coming up. And then we got to the end of their preseason phase. And they were like, hey, would you like to stay and play for us? And I was like, wow, this wasn't really in the cards. But the chance to stay and play on that team with those players, play for Don Jackson and learn, it felt like I was going to get more out of it than anywhere else I could have possibly been. And I remember my first practice so vividly. You know, it's in the old, the I think they call it the Valley, right? The old Berlin rink. And I remember being on the ice with like Steve Walker and Dennis Peterson and Nathan Robinson, Darren Quint. And, you know, the list of this team goes on and on and on. This team was so good. And I remember watching people give Steve Walker passes, and they couldn't give him a pass he couldn't handle. You know, it's me chunking a pass to him, and he would just knock it down and go. The next thing you know, he makes some fantastic play out of it. And I just remember watching these guys and feeling like, man, I'm going to learn so much from them. And it was actually some of the young German guys that I ended up, you know, they were in my age group that I ended up kind of connecting with a bit. And it was a really, really cool experience. Got to play in the first game ever in O2 World. And that was a big time blowout. But it was a really special thing to be a part of.
Mm. Yeah, Don Jackson, I think his name will come up later again. A torn ACL cut short your first European experience. You spent the next 2 to 3 years playing in the AHL and the ECHL. When did you first consider transitioning into coaching?
If I'm honest, I only ever dreamt of being a player. That's the only thing I ever dreamt of. I only saw my life working out that I was going to play in the NHL for the rest of my life. Like, I didn't have a backup plan. I wasn't thinking about other things. It was like you're so hyper focused on a singular goal all the way through. And it was, you know, it was really difficult. You know, I was just starting to get comfortable in Berlin, and I tore my ACL, and I was like, man, that was a big challenge. It's a year to come back. And, you know, ended up tearing my other one. And it was like all of a sudden I'm starting to get these signs from like the Lord above that's like, hey, maybe you need to transition out of hockey and into something else. And what I realized is, you know, maybe that there's something else set out for me. What ended up happening was I got done playing in Cincinnati, my last concussion, and I came home and I took the first job I could take, and it wasn't a job I enjoyed doing. But I got a phone call through one of our contacts that offered me this opportunity to go coach in the Federal Hockey League. And I'm like, never even heard of the Federal Hockey League. I don't know what this is. And they said, well, it's in Danville, Illinois, which is a place I was familiar with. When that opportunity came up, it just sounded so much better than what I was doing that I was like, I think I want to give this coaching thing a try. So it wasn't really until then that I actually considered coaching at all.
How was that experience for you, your first coaching job?
Oh, man. Okay, so imagine this. You show up for this, and it's professional hockey, right? But this is the worst team in the worst league in all of North America. So the team was like 0-20-1, haven't won a game in regulation yet. And I come in, it's November. I'm the third coach. So the first coach got fired because it was whatever, and that mistreating people, whatever. And then the second coach had an accident on the ice. He got tripped and fell and hit his head because one of the players fell down. And so here I come in, I'm the third coach of the season already in November. And like, I looked around, you know, not only am I the coach, but I'm also the general manager. But general manager isn't just like the hockey operations. I was selling corporate sponsorships. I was selling season tickets. My fiance at the time, or girlfriend, I can't remember where we were, was helping me with game scripts. And, you know, like it was just like, it was everything except hockey. And, you know, I spent the first probably 2 weeks sleeping on a mattress in the rink because I didn't even have a place to live. And, you know, we could probably spend a whole podcast talking about stories from this. It taught me probably everything, it could about working in hockey aside from coaching. You know, I was doing everything but, and coaching was almost an afterthought, but it did give me this desire that was like, oh, I can see myself doing this. I like this.
After a season in Denver, you had another stint in Orlando with the Solar Bears. Shortly after, you joined Don Jackson as assistant coach in Salzburg. How did you two contact, or did you stay in contact?
Once I got into coaching, you know, what coaches do is they get on the phone and they call other coaches. And it's partly like networking, partly information gathering, partly, you know, I was so young and green, I want to learn everything. And I knew Don had some things that I knew that I wanted to have information on, specifically at that time, the Berlin forecheck. And I knew I wanted to know that information. So I called him up and, you know, asked for some details on it. He was gracious enough to share with me. And then fast forward a couple years when Don transitions to Salzburg, he called me, and it might have been, you know, last week in July or first week in August, like training camps starting, like in the next couple days. And he called me up and he's like, hey, you want to come with me in Salzburg? And I'm like, what? I was like, what's the position? I'm imagining that I'm going to be like a team services guy, you know, like just, you know, booking hotels and flights and, you know, making sure everything is set up. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but I was very willing to take that position. And Don's like, actually, I've got an assistant coach position. I was like, oh, this is way better than what I was imagining. So, I had the opportunity to go in and go be with Don. And obviously that's a big move. Like you're moving across an ocean and into a place that you've never been before. But again, having the opportunity to be with Don was something that was too good to pass up.
So for the next part, I'd like to welcome Megan in the video. Hi, Megan.
Hi.
Yeah, now we are just been talking about the first move to Europe. Actually, you were part in the second year. So for the second year, he didn't go alone this time. But I want to circle back to the times when you met. When did you meet Matt the first time, and what was the impression?
We met in 2009, and I had been going to school for sports marketing. So I wanted to have a career working in the sports industry in some capacity. And I got a job in the town that I went to university at for a hockey team. And Matt happened to play for the hockey team that I worked for. So I was in the front office selling tickets, but then also I was the on-ice MC. So the person with the microphone that, you know, interviewed the players and
Megan and the Ice Girls.
Yeah.
That was the name of it.
And so I interviewed Matt a few times, got to know him. We became friends. And then I kind of got recruited by a team that was just kind of a step up in the AHL. And I started working there. And the same week I started working, he got called up. So he was kind of the only person I knew. So I made him do all of our appearances, and I kind of went to him with any questions. And from there, we just became friends and started dating.
Did he make the first move?
Yes.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I was very career driven, and it was very clear that if you're a woman working in sports, you could not fraternize with the players. And I did not want to mess that up. I had my dream job. I knew what I wanted to do. So while I was working for the hockey team, we never dated. But then I got a job with the baseball team, which is what I really wanted to do. was working mm-hmm. baseball. And so when I got the job and switched to the baseball team, he said, okay, can we go on a date now?
Smart. He took a chance. Yep.
Timing's everything.
Yeah.
What did you think in the beginning, where would it lead? Was it right away, oh, that could be something for a longer time? Or was it like, yeah, he's nice, let's see?
Oh, man. I don't know if I knew right away this was going to be it, but he did. I remember early on, he was like, I'm going to marry you. And I was like, okay, pump the brakes, buddy. So, but he, I always tell him that in other relationships, I always got bored. And he was never boring. And the life, the hockey life, is exciting and unpredictable. And I liked that.
Yeah, an exciting step for you for sure was moving to Europe. What were your initial thoughts about moving there?
Well, I'm from a small town in Illinois. It has 6,000 people and one stoplight, so very small. I had only left the country one time, and it was to visit Germany, and I really enjoyed it. So when the opportunity came around, we had just finally were back in the same city. We had done long distance for 3 years. He had finally gotten a job in Chicago. We were not engaged yet. And this opportunity came around, and I thought, wow, this is something you can't pass up. You know, Don Jackson, he wants to mentor you. He wants to teach you everything he knows. Couldn't say no. So that was kind of the initial reaction. And then the realization hit, like, oh, that means probably I'm going to have to live there too eventually. He proposed actually right before he left for Salzburg. The first time he went, it was like the day before he left, he proposed. So my brother always says he's the smartest guy because he proposed and then left the country.
That's me.
But it was something we both thought, oh, we're young. It'll be our first year married just for 1 year. Let's go experience things and have this adventure. You know, we can always come home. So it was exciting.
Yeah. And I think that's a really important part of the story is Megan and our relationship was something that I did see becoming more serious. And, you know, I had a ring and I was ready to propose, and she didn't know this at the time, but, you know, like that's sort of where my head is. And I want to make sure that this is going to align with our relationship. And like, I brought this idea to her almost, you know, like, hey, could you imagine this? Like, you know, this is such a crazy thing to even think about. And Megan was like, no, Matt, you have to do this. And, you know, having that like support and reassurance from her, like that we're like, we're going to be okay to go through this. That was a huge part in me being able to like, to make the move to go be with Don. And, you know, like Meg said, we weren't anticipating on a 10-year stay, but we were thinking like, 1 year, we could figure this out. And, but it was, you know, she was a huge part of me being a part of, you know, Red Bull and Team Germany, all this, like she was the beginning.
Hmm. Yeah, it's a good bridge to back to your career. In 2014, you moved to Munich. What did you expect to find there, Matt?
Oh man, that's such a good question. So I'll take this and I'll just go back a little bit. I was heartbroken at the end of the Salzburg year, like heartbroken. We lost in the finals in essentially, it was game five, but it's, you know, it's a 5-game series. So it's essentially game seven overtime. You know, that was mm-hmm. it. And to put in all of that work and then fall just short of the ultimate goal. I thought when you're with Don Jackson, you just won a championship every year. Like I was like, oh no, are we supposed to win? Like, isn't this just all that you do? But that was like really gut wrenching. And we were in our little bubble in Salzburg. We always heard about Munich and what was going on there. But I have to say that I didn't have an impression of Munich at all. Other than, mm-hmm. You know, a really cool city. And, you know, I knew that the model of Red Bull was that Munich was going to be the big thing. And I knew that much. I also remember getting a phone call in the middle of the summer, and I can't remember if it was Don or Christian that called me, but someone was like, "Hey, we're going to Munich." And I was like, "All right, let's go to Munich." You know, like it wasn't like a huge deal. It was like, you know, when in context, moving overseas and then just moving, you know, 100 minutes up the road, it's like not that big of a deal. So that was,
it wasn't a question.
Yeah, it was like, "Oh, cool. We're going." Yeah, we're going. Cool. Let's go to Munich.
Yeah. Neighbor town.
That's great.
In American sizes, it's like next city, right?
Yeah,
fun. Yeah, from then on, the opponents did follow the script, and Don winning titles. In your first season, you won the title. You repeated that two more times in the following up seasons. How did you feel as a coach to be a part of such a successful team?
Oh, man. So I'll go into like the first championship run. It was just so much fun, you know, like Don had been a part, I think he'd won 5 championships at that point in time or something like that. And I don't think I'd won anything since like the 9-year-old state championship in Illinois. And so it was like, it was so fun to be a part of a good team and, you know, play your little part, you know, in whatever that looks like, and just experience it and feel the feelings of like the pressure of playoffs and, you know, like feel like, you know, not winning a playoff game. What does that feel like? Feels like the end of the world. And then all of a sudden you got to pick yourself up and get right back on it for the next game. And we had some, you know, emotional games, you know, like I think it was game 5 against Cologne at home, you know, where we had the late comeback, you know, and it was, you know, just these remarkable things. And there were so many great challenges from our opponents along the way. But, you know, you win the first one and then you just feel like the championship is yours. Like it's ours to lose. Someone has to take this from us. And you go in but like for me as a coach, now I had an eye for what success looks like in this environment. And so once I had an eye for what success looks like in this environment, I felt much more equipped to be able to like make changes or make adjustments. Or if we get off track, I know where to help Don steer, because I'd seen it in action. And then you win 2 more times. And I have to say that was probably unlike anything I'll ever experience for the rest of my life, to be in a run like that. But it's all the people, you know, it's all the players. They make it possible. Don's guidance and leadership was remarkable through that time. Christian Winkler's steady hand on Red Bull Munich at that time, like it started, you know, with the leadership, and it sort of trickled down to the players, and they were so close and so great together. It was a privilege to be a part of.
Megan, you seeing this from the outside, what were you thinking about this runs?
Oh man, my stories are a little different because early on I was oblivious. You know, I would go to games and it was just fun. We'd go to the VIP lounge and we'd have a cocktail and we'd cheer. And the more involved I got, the more stressful it got. To the point, I remember the first championship run, I was pregnant with Mason. And my doctor was like, "You should probably not go to the games anymore. Your blood pressure is getting crazy," you know, because it was so high stakes. And so actually for the first 2 championships, I wasn't there. I flew home. I don't know if you remember this, but I flew home for the playoffs. Yeah. So
no, I don't
2016 and 2017, I flew home for the playoffs because I was like, I don't want to mess anything up. He is gone all the time anyway during the playoffs. He's not home. So we would fly back. Now, the third championship in 2018, they had a chance to beat Berlin at home in game 5. And so I was like, Mason was 2. I'm like, he can stay with my parents. I'm going to fly over. I'm going to be a part of this year. So I was already in Illinois. Game five, I fly back, I land, I get changed, and I go to the game. And I remember Don Jackson's daughter, Liza, did the same thing. So we're both there game five. Well, guess what happens? They lose. So then we're like, well, we're going to go to Berlin. We got to go to Berlin for game six. So we book our flights. We go to Berlin for game six. They lose game six. So game seven comes around, and Patrick Dallaire, before the game, said, if they score first, you have to leave. I said, okay. Okay, I'll leave if they score first.
They did. Mickey DuPont elbow shot on the power play. I remember
and
that.
I remember looking at Liza and being like, we have to go. Like, we cannot be here. It is us. We are the reason they're losing. Luckily, that game was a little less stressful because you guys got a pretty good lead and maintained it, I think, for a while, right?
We were down 1-0, and then we kind of kept rolling.
Yeah, and so we felt confident at the end of the first.
Right, 4-1 at the end of the first. It was, yeah, but fun. Patrick Dallaire, just for the listeners, is the goalie coach, or was the goalie coach at that time.
Yeah, good friend. His wife was kind of my confidant, and we stressed each other out during games and grabbed onto each other and were so nervous wrecks the whole time. But 2018 was the only one I got to experience there for Munich. And it was just awesome. At home, with the fans, you know, against Berlin, who we just hated. Berlin hated them. It was awesome.
It's that's a really fun story from the hockey side, those three games that Megan's talking about. So I don't know if you guys remember this, but the game five, I'm almost positive we lost in overtime.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And
I remember
it was sort of a controversial goal. Somebody slid into Danny, and it was like, did they slide into him before the shooting motion or after the shooting motion? But the lead up to that event is we're going down on a 2-on-1, and I can't remember who was with him, but somebody flipped the sauce pass to Brooks Masek, yeah, who's our best goal scorer, you know, like, and he's going down and he's got a, like almost a wide open net. And I remember Jason Jaffrey on the bench, and I'm standing on the bench behind the players. I remember Jason Jaffrey lift one leg over the boards and he undoes his chin strap to start taking off his helmet, because he's imagining this is the play that we're going to win the championship on. And the puck hits something on the ice and it pops over Brooks's stick, transitions the other way. And then you have the controversial goal at the other end. It was heartbreaking and like gut-wrenching, and this was one of my best learning experiences from a coaching perspective, because even though all of playoffs is stressful, this was a really good experience for me, like of a championship winning moment where it gets taken from you and the weight to which that affects the team. Because then we went into Berlin the next day or 2 days later, and we lost 6-2. And now it's like, wait a minute, we just had a play to win the championship, and now we're going home with game seven. And it was a really fun learning experience for me, because what we did from a coaching perspective is we attacked the minds of the athletes first, meaning like we were messed up. We were all messed up mentally. We were like, wait, this isn't supposed to be happening. This isn't how it's.
Remember, they had like the cake ready to go in the hallway. They had like all the beer down the tunnel, like, and everything was ready to celebrate. And then all of a sudden it was like,
yeah, now game seven.
Get rid of it. Get rid of it.
Yeah, now it's game seven.
Oh, it was awful.
And like, but just going in and like addressing the minds of the athlete and trying to put us in the best place to perform. And then we made one or two little tactical adjustments and the guys took care of the rest. But it was a really cool experience. I'll never forget this one, like winning a championship in game seven, like after going through the adversity, like when Megan's talking about this, it brings me right back there. Some of the best learning I've ever had as a coach.
Yeah. Yeah. Some fun feelings pop up when I hear that. Yeah. That's funny. Details I totally didn't remember from that time, mm-hmm, but yes, if you tell it, it's live, more or less. Mm. Yeah, you already said there were some lessons you learned at that time. What was your role as an assistant coach?
So when I first came to Salzburg with Don, I was only 2 years into coaching at this time, and Don was already a legendary coach in Europe. And Don said, all right, Matt, you're going to take care of the pre-scout. So you're going to go take a look at the opposition, break down the video, present to our team, you know, what the opposition is doing, how we're going to beat it. And you're going to take care of our young players. And that's going to be your little box. And he said, I also want you to write down everything I say. And I said, okay, I'll do it. So every meeting that he was in, I just got my notepad out and started scribbling down every single word that he said. I've got 2 years of documented Don Jackson notes of every word that he said. And then over what I learned from that was Don's method to success is consistent. And into that second year, I started to realize that a lot of what he's talking about, we talked about the first year, even with a different team. And, you know, the edits and things, because when you have a system that's successful, you don't have to guess if it works or not. You already know. So now you're like, hey, let's just do this and do it well and do it better and adjust that way. So that was where I started. Over the course of time, you know, he started to give me the power play responsibility. And then over the course of time, he gave me game reviews. Over the course of time, he gave me the penalty kill. Over the course of time, it was, you know, just basically, I remember, I think it was after we were going into Wolfsburg, and was in the finals at during one of those runs. And Don and I are sitting in our bus, and we're looking across the table from one another. And he looks me in the eye, and he's like, Matt, you're ready to be a head coach now. And that was the ultimate compliment. I was like, you know, I'm like flattered. I'm like, really? You know, like
me? He like texted me, John said, I'm ready to be a head coach.
Like, you know, and it was quite a compliment. And I wasn't a head coach the next year. But what he did for me was mentor me from small box. You take care of these small little things to you can expand your role to like taking care of a lot and, you know, probably doing too much that I'm not doing anything like to the extent it could be, but he knew what he was doing and he was getting me ready, to be able to handle, you know, this on my own someday. And, you know, and to the point now where it's like, yeah, do you need me to coach power play? Sure. You need me to coach penalty kill? Sure. Forwards, D, whatever you need. I feel equipped because I've been mentored, you know, in the right way.
Yeah. Brings me to the question, do you have like out of all what you learned, maybe two or three major lessons you learned from Don?
Okay. this is hard. So let me see if I can nail this. Because I it's been a long time since I've talked about it, but when you're Don Jackson's assistant coach for so long, so many people want to know what makes Don Jackson so special. And I at one point in time had it like narrowed down into, you know, what I thought it was. And the first thing I would say is his system. I think that the style of hockey where you put the opponent under pressure for every play and you take away their options and now you crank up the stress because of playoffs and it's sustainable throughout a team. You spend the whole year learning how to perform in high stakes hockey and now you put the opposition under pressure. They're going to make mistakes. And then you've got a team that can capitalize on those mistakes. That's a part of what makes Don special. The other part is he's always thinking about the players. Mm-hmm. There's coaches who are in there and they're like, there's like a divide, you know, like they're like, it's like us versus them. And Don, with every message, like I'd sit here and watch him like go through his video and his clips and, you know, why'd you keep that one? Why'd you talk about that? And he's like, he's always thinking about the way that the players are going to receive the message. It's not about him or his message. It's about how are they going to receive the message and how is it going to make them feel? And so, you know, sometimes it's okay to make them feel uncomfortable because we're not aligning with where we want to be. And sometimes it can be shaped where you can get there, but you're not upsetting the group. And the last part is Don's humility. Mm-hmm. Like he is the winningest coach, and I call him affectionately the winningest coach in the world. He's definitely the winningest coach in Europe. And Don took a chance. I'm a perfect example of Don's humility. Mm-hmm. You know, like Don took a chance on a 26-year-old to come over and coach with them. He's like, hey, you can come. I'll mentor you. I was like, I've been coaching for 2 years. I would, as a coach, I would never hire me. You know, like I'm going to hire somebody with way more experience that I know. But he's like, no, I already got that. You know, like in this. And then like giving away stuff. Here, Matt, you take the power play. Here, Matt, like Don's coach. Keep this in mind. Don's coached the same penalty kill system since he was coaching in the NHL, like in the early 2000s. So it's like, and then he gave me the penalty kill. He's like, no, you do it. You know, and it's like, just imagine that humility. And then like, he has this expression that he says all the time. That's like, the day that I stop learning, you put me in the grave. And it's just like, he's constantly trying to learn, improve, get better. He knows what he knows, and he knows it's successful, but he's not stuck in it. He's always trying to find ways to improve. And so, I mean, all of that, it's just like, he's just wonderful. He's a wonderful man. And he's been an ultimate blessing in our lives.
Nailed it pretty good. So I can totally second that. Being only on the staff, it always felt like being in the team. Not being somebody around helping to do something. He always made everybody feel to be the part of the whole picture, you know? And even the years after, it was when I didn't work for Red Bull anymore, it was still every time I saw him, he had a big smile on his face and said, hey, how are you doing? How is your kid? How's the family? And that's special. I totally second that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's jump to 2018, another special year. The German national team searched for assistant coach. And there you were, joining a silver medal run. How does that rank in your titles between Munich, Salzburg, and this silver medal? How do you rank this medal?
The scale of the Olympics is bigger. You know, like the Olympics are a worldwide event, you know, and the work that you put into a club season and building that is so much more for an assistant coach, for someone like me, you know, that just jumps in, you know, instead of that 3 week window, we're talking about, you know, months or years of building to accomplish a championship. And so to rank them, I think is unfair because they're so different. But the one thing I can say is that the scale of the Olympics, you know, like you come home and you're an Olympic silver medalist, and you know, people in our small town that have never heard of hockey, they're like, oh, we know the Olympics. Oh, you have a silver medal? That's really neat. And, you know, where they're, I'm like, we're the 3-time Deutsche Meister. And they're like, we don't even know what that means, you know? So, but we're maybe that might be, you know, a feel like a bigger accomplishment because more work went into it. The scale of the Olympics was, just, it's, you know, what's bigger than the Olympics. Mm-hmm.
Back to you, Megan. You already said you had Mason at the beginning, and the second child, Mila, your daughter, was born in the middle of a playoff run, if I recall it right, in Munich. How challenging was it for you to give birth in a country where you barely spoke the language?
Oh, Steph, what a great question. I remember Michelle Jaffrey, when I told her I was pregnant and I was due at the end of March, she said, don't you know you can't have babies during the playoffs? And I said, no, we didn't mean for it to happen like that. But my first, Mason was born in America, and I was very worried. You know, I wanted to be near my family. And with Mila, I knew I enjoyed, my doctor was great, and I felt like I had a good plan, and there were some other girls on the team that had done it and, you know, lived to tell the story. And so I thought, it's going to be fine. We're going to figure it out. But the story of when she came was, it was stressful because it was during the semifinals, I think against Berlin. And she was due kind of on the weekend, and they were in Berlin on Friday. And by, you know, the off day on Monday, Christian had texted and was like, any chance that baby could come today?
Yeah.
And I was like, that's not how it works, Christian. But then she came a couple days later. So she came on the Wednesday, and it was awesome. The hospital was amazing. My midwife was incredible. It was truly, as an American, especially the care that I received, it was just incredible. Great experience. You know, so that was Wednesday. And then I remember Thursday morning, Matt kind of looked at me and he was like, so can I go to Berlin? And I said, sure, go to Berlin. Why not? I'm going to be in the hospital anyway. Kim Dallaire had my older son, so he was taken care of. You know, now looking back, I'm thinking like, I really let my husband leave me in a hospital in a foreign country as the assistant coach. Like, he wasn't really necessary. I don't know, but they won that game. And he says it was because he got to be there. So
it's because she encouraged me to go. Yes.
No, but I do remember a doctor came in on Friday afternoon. He's a great man. And I didn't have many visitors because we didn't have, you know, family there. And he said, I thought you might be alone today. I thought Matt might be in Berlin. And so that was nice, but it was a great experience. Yeah. And now we have a little German. She loves to tell everybody she was born in Germany. And nice. Yeah, so. Mm-hmm.
Do they still speak German? But,
you know, the other day, Matt was speaking to Mason and he can understand it. He really understood what he was saying, but they kind of get annoyed. Mila will say nine. Mm-hmm. They both say Scheiße all the time. So that's just awesome. Sorry.
Okay.
So, you can bleep me.
No, that's fine. That's fine. Did you have a support network of players' wives or other people who helped you at that time?
Well, you guys, I feel like you guys were high up on my support. Your wife, especially, just asking questions. I was very worried that the baby was going to come when Matt was going to be gone. So I had a list of people that I was going to call if it happened. And if you didn't answer, I'm calling the next person on the list. I'm pretty sure you guys were on the list. There were like 20 people just in case that had to keep their phones on. But really, you guys were a huge support for me. And I felt like, yeah, that's the best part about playing overseas is you have this kind of core group of women that nobody's living at home. Everybody's new in the city and you become a family and you lean on each other. And yeah, I don't know what I would have done without, you know, the players and coaches' wives. Nancy Jackson was amazing. She would take Mason to preschool, I remember, so I could stay home with Mila and didn't have to leave. It was, yeah, truly survived because of that network.
I remember, as you said it now, you approach us and say, hey, can I put you on the phone list? Because you speak German.
Yeah, really. Yeah. We need it. And there were so many things that we didn't know. What does this mean? What does this say? Mm-hmm. You know, Google Translate in 2018 could only get you so far.
Yeah, didn't do much, right?
No. And the nuances, right? Like things might mean something different. You know, so you guys were so helpful.
So what were your most cherished memories of raising kids and managing a family in Munich?
Oh, man. Munich is very special to me because, you know, it's where I was newlywed and then it was where I was a first-time mom. It was really challenging at first with Mason because I didn't know what I was doing. And then we changed his time zone by 7 hours and he didn't sleep and I didn't have any help. But once we kind of got things figured out, I have such fond memories of the park. We lived near Leupold Park And I could probably still map out that park perfectly because we went on hundreds of walks in that park. The people were just, you know, at the playground and the other moms and the other kids. I have such fond memories of that. Taking him to the games, I loved when he got old enough to go to the games and then he would go on the ice afterwards. That's so cool that they do that in Europe. And playing with, you know, your kids and or with Anthony. And it's just like so many memories like that, were great.
I didn't write it down as a question, but it just come up to my mind. The first, when you came to Munich, I remember you saying, oh, everybody's so rude. They tell me at the supermarket, go away here, go there and do this
grocery store is very challenging for an American. It's one of the most stressful things that you could do to an American is send them to a German grocery store. Everybody's really quick and fast. And, you know, as an American, you buy groceries
small aisles.
Yeah, small aisles.
and we're translating everything. It's like imagine your first year. It's like you need cinnamon for the exercise and you have to like go figure out like
Zimt.
Yeah, oh, Zimt. Oh, okay, here it is.
Also, like, for example, the eggs. The eggs are in America in the refrigerator section. In Germany, they're like next to the toilet paper. And I was like, where the hell are the eggs?
I remember you saying, I didn't know you can keep the eggs outside of the fridge.
You were like, what do you think happens after they get laid by a chicken, Megan? There are two things about the people, and I would like to retract my statement because I have learned Americans, and especially where we're from, are very, you know, bubbly but it's kind of surface level sometimes, right? And I remember you said this to me. You said, Megan, it's hard to become friends with a German, but once you're friends for life. I think before we had dinner with you and Anne, that was something you said to me because you like weren't sure if we were going to be friends. And it kind of takes time to crack the surface. But then once you're in, it's like you're friends for life. And I would just, I was just telling someone who was wanting to travel to Germany, I said, you know, they're not going to be sunshine and butterflies and with all these pleasantries, but I always felt no matter where I traveled in Germany, the people were helpful. You know, they helped you get from point A to point B. If you had a question, they were willing to help you. I have such fond memories of the people in Germany.
Yeah. Nice to hear.
Yeah.
very
it's
genuine.
Not always.
All the time.
I do. I just was telling someone the other day.
Yeah.
I guess another.
We're just honest, right? And then that's a different state too, right? For you,
and a better appreciation for rules and customs, and if you're operating outside of those,
Do you remember the time on New Year's Eve, Steph, when you taught us about shooting off fireworks? Because that was bonkers to me, the fact that you guys shoot off all those fireworks on New Year's Eve. But Steph walked us downstairs into the street and he gave like a safety demonstration before we were allowed to let go. Remember, you put the firework in the cup and said, watch what happens to the cup. And the cup exploded. He said, that would be your hand if you didn't follow the instructions. Oh, I will never forget.
So bad.
No, it was so fun.
I also,
the people of Munich specifically and of Europe. There is no other fan experience like watching a game with Munich fans, European fans. That is like my son, when we came here, he thought that he was like, where are the people with the drums? You know, he's like, there's no drums here. That was such a cool memory to play and go to those games with that kind of atmosphere every single game. It was so awesome. So good job.
But it's difficult to get back on track. But Matt, back to head coaching. Let's not dwell too much on this period, as I would describe it as a pure success in Salzburg, right? Am I right?
Pure success. Oh, boy. I'm not sure that every day felt like pure success. So the one thing I can say is that I felt very ready to be a head coach. So I needed, you know, some people to believe in me. And so, you know, Christian Winkler, Renee Dimpter, at that point in time, Stefan Wagner was our team manager. And, you know, and obviously Don vouches for me, but I need a lot of people to believe in me to like have that opportunity. So I'm forever grateful for them for getting me started. Mm-hmm. Our first year maybe felt pretty easy. And when I say that, I had a really good coaching staff. Chris Barr is now a head coach in the PWHL. Matt Smaby is now an associate coach in college at North Dakota, and two very talented coaches. We had a very good team, and a very good goalie, and we just kept winning. And it was so fun. And you know, like we had some really fun customs on the team. Like after we'd win, on the bus ride home, Chris Barr would be the DJ, and you know, the guys would have a request chat that they would like send their request down, and so then he would play it up, and then the, you know, it was the DJ the whole way home. We had a lot of fun that first year, and we felt like we were ready to win, and then COVID happened. And so when you say, you know, with Salzburg, you know, nothing but a success, like that next year of COVID was traumatic, you know, and it was the same for everybody across the world. So I'm not going to sit here and like pound a drum that I'm like complaining about something. It was like, it was our world, you know, has and maybe will never see something like that again. Like that was so unique. And, but, you know, coaching an ice hockey team in your second year as a head coach at that time, like, you know, you're learning under the gun about a lot of different things that are ever changing, you know, and at the same time, you're supposed to win. Mm-hmm. And so it was a really unique year. Fun stuff was, you know, we had JJ Paterka on our team a little bit, and Justin Schutz, who because we started earlier in Austria than they did in Germany. So it's fun to coach those guys. We had a good team. We were young. And you know, there's just a lot of difficulties, probably more off the ice than on the ice that year. And then, you know, you go into the next year, and like I can tell you the way I was feeling as a coach was like, all right, well, like I'm supposed to be winning now. You know, like you're supposed to be winning a championship. If you're coaching Red Bull, and you know, like it, who cares who's counting what happened? You've been here for 2 years and you haven't won a championship yet. It's like you kind of feel that a little bit. Yeah. And I remember like going into that year, you know, I felt like we had a good team and a good opportunity. But we were really doubling down on our team culture. You know, like we felt like if we could get a little bit closer as a group, and it started by a little bit of retooling our roster. We got an influx of some middle-aged, Austrian players who contributed quite a bit. And then, you know, we brought in some great imports. And, you know, we had a team event at the start of that year where I thought we were going rock climbing or doing a high ropes course. And we ended up 50 meters suspended by wires above the ground, where we're all looking down, like fighting for our life. We had this collective moment as a group that was like impactful, you know, maybe not the safest thing to be doing, but like really impactful. And I remember like the coaching part comes out of me, and I said to the guys were all gathered around a fire drinking coffee after that, and I remember like kind of feeling this moment that was like I have to capture this, and I went up and I asked the guys, I was like, how did we get through that? Like, what did we do? And you know, somebody's like, I'm just trying to live, you know, like I'm gripping as tight as I can, and Thomas Roffel said, I was just thinking ring by ring, step by step. And that was the way he got through all of the fear, was just like kind of one step at a time and one step at a time. And that line from Thomas became a theme for us for our whole season that year, where it was like, no matter what these 2 years had been like behind me, it's like, we're just going to focus keep our focus small, onto the next game, onto the next ring, onto the next step. And we rode that momentum to sweeping the playoffs and winning 12 in a row. Mm. And this to me is when you go back and you compare like the Olympics part, like the 2 year, you know, into the third year buildup, you know, to win your first championship as a head coach, that's pretty special too. And going through the ups and downs and getting to feel that. And then the next year, you know, getting to win in game seven again, you know, that when you're down 1-0 going into the third period, it's like you're just kind of collecting all these lessons that you've learned along the way and then applying them and then watching the guys go execute. So I think maybe if you look back now on the outside, it's like, wow, 2 championships in 4 years. You know, you only had 3 playoffs to get that done. It feels like nothing but a success. But I can tell you that in the moment, there was a lot of growing pains to be able to get us to this side where we can feel like mm-hmm. it was a successful journey.
A similar yes. question for you, Megan, as we asked in Munich, what was the most difficult aspect of relocating mm-hmm. your entire family to another city?
Well, that one was interesting because we had just had Mila in Munich. And remember, Steph, you had found us a different apartment. So we had just moved yes. into a new apartment. And then maybe a week later, Matt was like, I think we're going to go to Salzburg. So we lived in that apartment for like a month, maybe, and then packed up, moved to Salzburg. That year was a challenging year for me because I had lost my mom during the off season. And I had 2 little kids at home and it was Matt's first year as a head coach. So, there were a lot of things that went into that move. We were finally getting ready to join Matt. We were over here and he was already in his season. We were joining him in October just because of everything that had gone on with my family. And 2 days before we were supposed to leave, Mason was 3 at the time and fell and broke his arm. So then it delayed us another month to get over there. So we were at the first season, we were just there, you know, a few months and it was very, you know, it's always challenging to relocate a family, but when your kids are small, it's a little bit easier, I think, because the schools aren't as big of a deal and, you know, they're not upset about friends. So, I don't know, the most challenging part was probably just leaving Munich because I was so familiar and, I had such a good routine there, but then, you know, Salzburg is just, it was a special, special place to live and to have kids. And even though it was a very challenging time because of COVID, I still say that was some of the hardest years of our lives were those first couple years in Salzburg. Mm. Truly those challenges, COVID, you know, not having that great of a season the second year, it made the championships just that much better. Like that Salzburg will always be a special time of our lives for sure.
Mm. Looking back on your time in Europe, would you do it all again like that?
It's funny because the first year I lived there, I was probably would have said no. But there became a point in Salzburg, and I think this was probably COVID when people couldn't come visit us and we couldn't really go home very easily. And we just kind of hunkered down, the four of us, you know, and we really grew as a family. And there was a time that we looked at each other and we were like, we could do this the rest of our lives. Like we could live here forever. Mm-hmm. The people in Austria, our neighbors were amazing, you know, just so, so friendly. I could have lived there forever. And it's very, we talk about this a lot, that whenever I say things like that, I could live here forever. I'm so happy here. This is so great. It's always like, well, we're moving. Mm-hmm. So I would do Europe again. We've always talked about, you know, gosh, someday to go back would be amazing. The kids know if we don't go back before that, we had told them 10 years from when we left, we would go back. So like Mason would have been 17 and Mila 14. We're like, we'll go back 10 years no matter what. So it was a special place. And I would, yeah, absolutely. People in North America are kind of afraid, especially in the hockey world, of going overseas sometimes. And whenever the wives here would talk about that, I tell them it was one of the greatest experiences of my life. And I would recommend it to anybody.
Matt, what are your thoughts about that question?
Would I go back?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. I always say I'm a bull, you know, I'm a Red Bull, you know, wherever that's going to be. But, you know, as far as like living in Europe, I love living in Europe. You know, I loved riding my bike, you know, to the rink in Salzburg. I rode my bike to the rink in Munich, you know, all the way, you know, winter rains. I miss that stuff, actually. Like I like the layout of the schedule for families, in Europe. I think you have a lot more family time. I like, you know, specifically comparing it to the American Hockey League, you know, where your roster is ever changing. It's nice having a group that you're building with the whole year, and you've got, you know, that vision of winning and stability, you know, that Red Bull provided. I loved Europe. Loved it.
The Schoko croissants.
Yeah, more importantly.
The Käsespätzle.
Here we make a cut today, and this was the first part. For the second part, stay tuned for next week.